Hola, my beautiful humans. This is Jasmine Castillo, and I bring stories and cases from the people of color community, bringing awareness of murdered and missing Indigenous women, girls, Two-Spirits, the LGBTQ community, Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander, Black Indigenous people of color. These are their stories. So, welcome to Hands Off, my podcast. Hello, my homekins. Welcome to episode 56, The Search for Answers for Daniel Robinson's Disappearance. As a podcaster, it is my duty to bring important and relevant information to my listeners. Today, I want to bring attention to the case of Daniel Robinson, a scientist who has been missing since June 23, 2021. I had the honor of speaking to David Robinson II, a father determined to find answers and bring his son home. David will not settle for the minimum number of searches and support from law enforcement. I believe that if his case was handled properly from the beginning, Daniel would have been found by now. This is why I am reaching out to the community for support. According to reports, Daniel was last seen leaving his work site in the Sonoran Desert of Maricopa County, Arizona. He was driving his 2017 blue-gray Jeep Renegade and is believed to have headed west, deeper into the desert. On July 19, 2021, his vehicle was found by a local rancher a little over 2.5 miles from the work site in a remote part of the desert. However, Daniel was not found. David has created a website as a platform to share up-to-date information about Daniel's case with the public. I will place this in the show notes. Your support and help are greatly appreciated. Let's dive right in, shall we? We've got a lot to cover.
Yes. Thank you so much again, like I said, for even sharing Daniel's stories, you know, sharing my family's, what's going on with my family. So that's really important. I truly appreciate you taking the time out to do that. But yes, I am David Robinson. We're natives of South Carolina. My children, of course, you know, we all natives. We have family that is native. So everything we have family-wise is basically out of Columbia, South Carolina. Myself, you know, being a parent, you know, it's one of the proudest moments of my life. Of course, Daniel has a older brother who was the first to give me that idea. Hey, look, when you're a father, you have to do father things. You know, I remember first holding his brother up like they did in Roots and promised him that they would have anybody who come after him would have a father in their life. Unfortunately, and that happened to a lot of people, don't have fathers in their life. So I had to make sure that one thing that I wanted for my children, whenever that time came. And sure enough, I ended up having Daniel as well as his twin sisters and his older brother. And Daniel being the youngest, you know, he's the prize as well, the youngest male. And just Daniel himself, like I said, all of us in South Carolina, you know, I'm a military retired man. I, you know, of course, joined the Army and I did tours in Afghanistan. But like I said, for me, that's pretty much the gist of it. I am a computer engineer major, but didn't complete it, but that's who I am. That's what I went out to do in my life. My children are science oriented people. And, you know, so I kind of, like I said, greatly proud of that fact with my children and everything they have done and they're currently doing. Daniel, to get directly on Daniel, you know, being the youngest of the group, you know, he's the baby boy, like I said, early on, of course, being proud parents. Daniel was born without a right hand. Many people notice that and a lot of people don't, because I don't speak about it a whole lot. Daniel don't live his life based on that. But you know, it's one of the challenges, not for so much for Daniel, but it's challenges for his mother and myself. And just seeing Daniel in that condition, being born, he was born that way. It was very devastating for any parent, because you know, the first thing you're looking for when a child come out is all of their capacities, whether the fingers, toes, everything. And so it was a shocking moment for us. And it also had became a training moment for us as parents, because Daniel showed us something totally different than what we had ideas. Daniel's mother would like to push prosthetics as soon as we got to the opportunity to get to the age of starting to try out the prosthetics. because we had school in mind. Of course, you know, when children go to school, you run about if they're going to actually fit in with their peers. You know, children can be kind of cruel at times. So we want to make sure that Daniel's having the best of the best. So we'll make sure that he's definitely ready for school. But like I said, Daniel, being who he is as a person, showed us really early. I think it was probably like, I would say about 5 or about possibly 6 when he went to his mother and asked about his right hand. I'm sure he was looking at the siblings the whole entire time and wondering why he didn't have a right hand, but they did. He did ask his mother about it. His mother told him that God have it and he had to use it. God need it right now and he'd get back to him. But after she told him that, he never asked the question ever again. Never asked the question about it. He just moved on with everything he'd done. I have watched my son challenge his siblings, you know, just simple things like video games, you name it. I mean, it's amazing to watch him play using the joystick and being able to figure things out and do it his way. And he do it his way, he do it really well. But like I said, during the school, the early parts, being worried, his mother's pushing the prosthetics. And then he finally said, hey, you know, he just had enough of that. He would take it off often and refuse to put it on because he just wanted to be himself. And we saw that throughout through the school's days by teaching himself how to play the French horn. It's one of the first instruments he have done. In fact, Daniel showed us also that he was going to be known a lot, you know, because he won Student of the Week in South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, to highlight his accomplishment of playing that French horn. So he was on the local news and it was a really proud moment for us as parents. And from there, like I said, through school, he's looking at his older siblings and he challenged them academically as well. we look at the grades. My son, the older son, he's the leader. So they all looked up to him and he does really well. But Daniel, looking at the rest of them and want to outdo him and his twin sisters as well. So academically is one of those things that was going back and forth. But it kind of benefit me and Daniel's mother because, you know, hey, of course, we want them to do well in school. Once he graduated out of high school, he decided to go to college at Charleston and become a geologist. But he was still kind of undecided, just like most freshmen are. He was a little undecided, but he took that class, and after that, he just fell in love with it. He fell in love with it so much that he done really well. He also showed us that, you know, he can be a very friendly person because he of his twin sister was going to school with him in the College of Charleston at that time. They would often report back to me, you know, daughters are. Daniel's always at the parties and always with his friends and everybody know who he is. So he had a lot of friends. He started gathering a lot of friends really quickly. And that was a little adjustment for us as parents because, you know, hey, we're spending money for school. We want to make sure you actually using that money wisely. Daniel would, you know, say do all the things he liked to do. He was living that real college experience, you want to say, for a young man, and out to Arizona where he started his career. And that's one of the biggest points for us as a parent because that's the moment when he started showing us that he is ready and he's ready for manhood. And he showed us that.
That's an awesome story. Yes. I love to hear the background about that because it's like, where did they get that push, that determination? And it's like, I want to say it's like father, like son, because here we are. You got that same. It's amazing to hear more about a person other than, you know, what's going on today. I like to hear that we have lives. We matter.
That's right. That's right.
So thank you so much for sharing that. I love that. I love that story. And to hear that you have a military background, it just like, I'm a military brat. So it hits home in a lot of the aspects that you've talked about. And traveling all over the world, it's amazing. And I'm so in the science background, like that hits home with me. The art side to mathematics side. It's beautiful to see your children growing and using their talents and to go beyond the limits and their boundaries. That's awesome. As a proud parent, right? It's just like, it warms your heart. Like, oh my gosh, you expect things, you know, expect the best out of them, but even kids shock you in regards to how they can get things done. So thank you for sharing that.
A lot of times we have these conversations, people walk in, I'm sure outside looking in and say, what are they talking about? At any given moment, we can sit there and analyze something, you know, and break it down to a certain degree. And then when I say break it down into a science situation, so that's our conversation. That's the most biggest part I miss when they're younger and we're growing up together and having those type conversations and stuff like that. So yes, definitely they surprise you with a lot of things they do know.
Yes, exactly. Like they're sponges. They try to find, they try to pretend like they're not listening, but they're listening, they're learning, right. And they have a role model to follow. Such a great role model, like yourself and their mother. So it's like to see that, it's just it warms your heart even more. So it's awesome. Yes. Thank you so much for sharing that again. So
yes, thank you.
What do you think, Dan, you value most in life? But I think if you want to go in depth in regards to what that is, I would love to hear.
Yeah, sure. Daniel, like I said, you know, even with everything I was speaking of in terms of him, you know, striving to do better, to challenge himself, you know, he'll come to me. You know, I'm an inventor as well. A lot of people don't know that. But of course, I didn't achieve any patents. And I can tell you stories about that. But I didn't create so many things. So my children knew about that. I kind of watch him. And what he would do, he'd come to me and say, hey, Dad, I got a new idea as well, you know. And some things that he was doing was geared towards helping people who have missing limbs or things like that, how they can do things. For instance, he wanted to lift weights and he came to me as a young man and he created this whole system that I was really trying to help develop with him to help people with prostheses that could aid them when they're lifting weights. And so they can get these muscles in certain places and things like that they really want. So before he went missing, he wanted to become a business owner. He wanted to take his degree in geology and open up his own company and also some other aspects of trying to, of entrepreneurship. He wanted to be a millionaire before he turned 30, that things like that. But most of all with Daniel, I can say is that the fact that, you know, being such a family-oriented person, that's why, you know, don't want to jump the gun, but that's the reason why I kind of put that in public a lot, is to show people that Daniel's not a person to say, hey, I just want to be away from my family. You know, that's unheard of for the family and I, because he's very family oriented. I tell the story often how even during the COVID times, he showed that most recently, when the COVID time, after the stay at home, we kind of got loose a little bit, you can go travel some. First thing he did when he got loose in Arizona is to fly back here in South Carolina to see his grandparents. I mean, just make a special trip to see his grandparents. I didn't really know he was coming until he was getting ready to leave and come down. And he came here to just go see his grandparents. He had two grandmothers that he wanted to go see. And, you know, just as a protectionist person that he is as well, he stayed outside the window. He said, hey, I'm not coming to your house. I just want to talk to you through the window, because, you know, we didn't really understand COVID at the time and he wanted to make sure he keep his grandparents safe. But Daniel also is a young man that throughout his life we have any kind of family conflicts. You see two family members not really talking, whatever little thing they got going on. Daniel, what he would do is he'll call one or the other, but some kind of way he'll bridge that thing back together. So I watch him do things like that with the family as well. So that's the kind of person he is. So I just wanted to throw that out as well, some of the parts I may have missed.
Hey, the more the merrier. I love to hear it. I love it. I seriously do. When I was younger, I was the kid who would go to the old senior community centers and the retirement centers and just listen to the stories of back in the day, the stories of people. I admire them. And it just to hear people talk about their journey and the things that they have overcome, it empowers myself to say, you know what, there is no limits. There is no, well, it can't be done. Here we have a living proof of a person who lived in much more dire situations and the war and the depression and the aspects of being fleeing from countries and trying to survive under attack. Like it's currently happening now. It's just the stories are, even though it's bittersweet and to, you know, the loss of lives of family members and the continuation of these types of circumstances, but it's like the power of the will, you know, the will of a person. It just brings so much. It brings so much emotion to me because, you know, I'm connected to that. I'm connected to it because I have a story of my own. And it's like we can do it. We're just so determined to get things done, to accomplish things, to make it happen. And one of the things people will always say, well, you can't do that. You can't do this. And I always tell them, watch me,
right.
You know, watch me. And I love that feeling. And I love to hear that same type of thing. That good to listen to that. Thank you so much for that. And share the more that you can. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
Share more. Whatever, right. Whatever you feel comfortable in sharing, I am the person. So
yes.
Describe Daniel's personality, but if you'd like to elaborate, I can. If not, I can go ahead and
I can get one more thing. That I often ask about, you know, some things that's towards Daniel's personality and some of the challenges. You know, I would tell people just missing my son. You know, my 2-hour conversations that I have with my son, I mean, like all the time, that's all we do. And it's to the fact that if Daniel would have been calling right now and I'm doing this interview, I say, send him a text or something. Hey, I'm doing it. I'll call you back or for something I have to do at a certain time when he called and is right close to that time. I know I have to talk to Daniel for like 2 hours. It's going to be a 2-hour conversation. That's this period. That's the flat line, the 2-hour conversation. And so, like I said, he know and I know we get to talking, it's going to be the minimum of 2 hours. So we definitely have to set aside certain things. But what I want to do is also with his character of a person is some of the things that I would say to people. I miss my son, good and the bad moments, right? And sometimes when you have a missing loved one, you kind of look out and say, man, you know, I'll take anything. You know, say some of the things where I say, hey, a person, are you just aggravating me right now? Or whatever the case may be, you miss those moments. I remember when Daniel was in college, like I said, having that big college experience and hanging out with his peers and in my mind thinking about all the money being spent and is he using that money to party and things like this. But one day he called me and he knew how to get it from me, but he'll call me. He'll get out from his mother or for myself. So he called me one day and said he needed groceries, you know, and he was hungry. He ran out of food. And, you know, of course, what parent would say no to that, you know? And so I remember sending him some money and I happened to go on Instagram and look at my page. And on the feed, I see his, you know, on the feed, it comes up and he has had some girls in the background. He's part. I'm like, I know this guy's not taking the money I just gave him to go party. I mean, it just right an hour after that. So I kind of laugh at those moments. And I was like, I said, I know Daniel did not just go out and use my money to enjoy himself. But yeah, but that's one thing for sure is Daniel have a way of, I think when I go back and look at that, his siblings would get in trouble a lot because, you know, he's the youngest. And we look at, you know, all three, we come in the room and they going at it about something. And you look at them and say, yeah, it can't be him. This is Daniel. Daniel did this, blah, blah, blah. No, we don't want to believe that. Not Daniel. But yeah, he's really, really have a way of getting his siblings in trouble. him facing the consequences. But that's one of the things I just think about that, Daniel enjoying himself with his friends. You know, even when it's his college, I was worried as well. He would take frequent trips with his friends. They went to Puerto Rico. I'd never been to Puerto Rico. They've been to Puerto Rico, and I don't know how he got there because when he asked me, I told him no, you're not getting money, go to Puerto Rico. I looked on social media, he was in Puerto Rico with his friends. He told his mother and his siblings that he's gone, and his mother gave him the money. So when he was in Puerto Rico, then she called me back. You know, his mother and I divorced, of course, but she called me back and said, Daniel's stuck in Puerto Rico. And, you know, that's what I found out. He's stuck in Puerto Rico, he can't get back. You know, he needs some money, he can't send him some money to get back. And I said, no. I said no because, you know, I said, hey, he got there, he figured out how to get there, and he got you, he can get back. He's still in the United States, you know. So he found his way back. So, but I said that also showed me that he can also figure his own way. So, and he had done that when he went to out there in Arizona. You know, he kind of looked up to me. I could see a lot of myself and Daniel. You know, I give them the background. I give you some little back details too. I became a single parent. And so I was raising him and his siblings at one moment of their childhood growing up. And one thing I was instilling in them was some of those values when it comes to, especially my sons, to be men. You know, though I came from a single mother's home, my mother had purposely put me in front of some of the men at church who I was considered as great men. And they taught me some great things in how to character yourself as a father, character yourself as a man who's doing some things. So I made sure Daniel and his brother got those teachings as well about manhood and man standards on two feet. Like my mother told me, say, a man do not steal anything. You know, if he wants something, he work hard with his hands. He go get it. He make it. And so Daniel, when he got to Arizona, I saw some of those things coming out that he was taught as a young man. He wanted to, you know, make sure he stand his own two feet as a man. You know, I saw that manhood coming out, you know, and he was really proud, and he had called me and you know, I remember when I wanted to get him a car when he first got there, he said, no, I'm good. And found out he went and bought himself a little cheap little hoopty, we like to call. And that hoopty, you know, he used those skills that I taught him and the sister how to repair and fix things themselves. So they was able to do that, fix those and repair those vehicles. That vehicle, keep it running just to make sure he's getting to work on time and things like that. So that's what he did until he ended up buying the Jeep Renegade that you guys see in the story today.
Wow. Like, what? You are absolutely right in regard, like father, like son. I can see it resonate. Yes. In how you represent, you know, Daniel, and from previous conversations with, you know, your platform that you have when you're doing your actual like live conversations, just to talk about Daniel and the connection that you and you have, the 2-hour conversation, like, oh my gosh, if only I could get my kids to do that for 2 minutes on the yeah. phone. They're grunting, you know.
Well, I can tell you siblings don't do that, though. They don't talk that long. I mean, even my daughters, you know, twins, they don't talk as long. They give me 30 minutes, if that. But yeah, not as long. So that's just Daniel.
Yeah, man, I wish I had a father figure. And I love that your mother had put that, embedded that type of, you know, morals and ethics in regards to being brought up around men, specifically that's men, right, with such a good following and leadership in the church, and, you know, just having strong men in your presence. Because definitely. And you're spot on in regards to how, you know, a lot of people don't have that father figure, who don't have a mother who is a strong woman to say, hey, you know, I can step back and make sure that my son or my daughter or whoever it is has got the proper role models in their life, and to keep them in that positive
That's
direction.
Right.
So just to have a strong woman as your mother, it's just
That's
like,
right.
I'm like, I'm proud for you, and, you know, everything else down the line, you know, your children are taking the benefits from how you are brought up and how your mother was brought up and so forth and so on. And to hear that, I'm a very emotional person, but I'm glowing with like just so much pride in hearing that, because we don't get to hear that. You know, we don't get to hear the other story, the backstory of our people of color and how we were raised.
Oh, yes, yes. My mother, like I see you said, she did everything she can, like I said, to make sure that my sister, I could tell you that part, the only two. And she did everything she can from a mother's perspective. She can't be a dad, but she did some things to where I think that she wanted to make sure that I was getting the right nurturing that I should get, as, you know, from a male role model, is what I'd like to say, because I did have one in church in particular. He was a great role model for me. And, you know, just the fact that she was there to do the best she can as a woman, you know, try to, for instance, I tell people this now from a mother standpoint, just with simple things of something we take for granted now, how to treat a lady in a sense, for instance, opening doors. You know, that's old school from where I come from, but I learned that from my mother. And I tell people now, my children as well, my grandma just taught me that, because, you know, that's all things she wanted to see in a man. She made sure I learned those, but they came in handy in my life. And so, like I said, she just wanted to make sure that we were raised right. We had the right things going on in our mentality. We did not stealing or going out and do some type of crime. You know, we're trying to get a seed in life and things like that. So she was really typical with that, despite of the fact that she struggled. You know what I'm saying? She's a woman, like I said, just being a single parent. I remember many days she would cook meals, and but she didn't eat. And then we said, "Mom, you want to eat too?" She said, "Oh, I'm not hungry." You know, not realizing, but as an adult, I know, because we just didn't have enough food. And she wanted to make sure that we're eating. And, you know, even when it came to her not eating at all, I remember a couple times she might take one little bite of a bread or something like that. And, you know, just a little simple little things. But I'm saying some of those ethics and things, the way she did things, look back and I can look at the reason why I could be the way I am, and the way her, my children could be the way they are, because I do tell them those things, and things I learned, I shared them with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that resonates with me. I've been a single mother. Well, pretty much I've been a mother for almost 28 years. So my oldest is going to be turning 28 in March. So I don't look like it.
I just about to say, you know, the whole time I'm trying to put that in my head.
I don't look
I was like, wait a minute, you're like about 18 yourself.
Yes. Right. Thank you. But one of the things that, so I struggle, so I understand that. And yes, you being a single parent too, and you definitely understand it. It brings perspective in regards to how things were as when your mother was dealing with this single parenting. I always told, there was instances where I would say, eat what you can and whatever you have on the plate, I'll eat it.
That's right.
So I know how that is. I'm trying not to cry. It was hard. But they all survived.
That's right.
I survived.
You know, just from a male standpoint, when I was a single parent, people laugh at me now, but I remember my neighbors always come because my children, they know about corned beef hash and beef stew. That's what it was. Beef stew in a can, you know. And I remember a neighbor used to come and she'll look at what I'm cooking children for dinner and say, "You can't cook beef stew like that." And she'll make this big thing and with all these fresh vegetables in it and stuff and say, "That's beef stew." And that's the first time I ever had beef stew without it being in a can, you know. But that was some of my go-tos because I just not as a guy, to be honest with you. My mom taught me, and the crazy part, what I have learned to cook, it came from my mother. I would be in the kitchen, my sister wasn't. But I would learn more of those cooking skills from her, whatever I had. I wasn't the best cook, but whatever I had, that's what I had to do for my children. But I can see just the little that I was having at the time, what my mother was going through by herself. You know, it was a lot. Yeah, I can imagine, especially in back when she was doing it as well. So, yeah, it's a lot for a parent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my gosh. You appreciate life more.
Yes.
You understand it. You respect it. You respect things around you. Your moral and ethics are heightened in knowing the type of struggle that, you know, your parents went through. And then you have the realization of, wow, you know, perspective is definitely different. But yeah, thank you for sharing. I love that. I love this. Thank you.
You know, you have there about, you know, sometimes that this really particular that Daniel is especially joyful. That would be one of those things with Daniel. He has a lot of joyful moments. And the reason why I say it that way, because, you know, like I said, when he was younger, he always, some kind of award he's getting, he's really happy about that. I think the only one I miss, like I said, the actual, when he was going on television to play the instrument and his French horn, I missed that because I was in Afghanistan. I was fighting for this country and I missed that. I came back to once I made it back to the States, and I was in Fort Hood at this time. I don't even call it Fort Hood anymore, but I was there and I heard about it through some of my high school friends, you know, on the Facebook page. "Hey, your son doing blah, blah, blah." And I'm like, "What?" You know, that's one of the highlights that I remember him in younger years, accomplishment just by being on television. And so that really made him very happy. The moment he graduated, of course, you know, that night, and I was trying to eat it all up. I was trying to eat all his time up. And he, you know, of course, he have a lot of friends. Like I said, after graduation, his mother left and his, you know, the other family members left. And I just hung around and I said, "You know what? My son graduated from college. Me and him going out together." I had my own plans about it. And he said, he and I sat at a dinner at first. And afterwards, I said, "Hey, man, let's just go out. Let's have some fun." He stayed with me for a good 30, 40 minutes. That's the first time I seen him say, "Well, you know, I could tell he had that thing where he want to go hang with his friends." So I said, "You know what? I you know, I felt a certain way, but I was like, you know, yeah, I'm going to take this 2-hour trip back to Columbia and go ahead and leave. But I could see that moment of being able to say, hey, I finally, you know, achieved that degree and graduated. And that was one of the biggest highlights for him as well. And, you know, if I can go back and relive that moment with him, really would do that, because I just watched him, how, you know, he accomplished that goal, and that's what he wanted to do, and he did it. So that's one of the things I want to elaborate on that as well. Daniel, he went to Arizona. That's why I know he really loved geology. Daniel would always, I mean, like, oh my gosh, calling me all the time. He always somewhere in Arizona. Some beautiful places. He showed me on the phone, and these amazing rocks, you know, formations. And I think you guys probably can get an idea in your head. I don't know where it's supposed to be, but on the Grand Canyon area, because he's down in some crack of the earth. And I don't know, but I'm like, you know, it scares me as a parent, to be honest with you, you know, like, you know, and I ask him a lot of times, I'm like, who's with you? Oh, I'm just out here by myself. And I'm like, what? You know, you know, that's not something I would do. And but hey, man, you know, I don't like that at all. But, you know, oh, yes, other people, you know, that he don't know, whatever the case may be out in the areas. But that's what he do. He loved nature and he loved that. So if he and I would get together, I'm sure it would be what he'd been trying to get me to do the whole entire time. And that's to, first of all, he loved Arizona. He tried his best since he'd been there, try to get me to move to Arizona. And that would never happen, I told him. But I'm a water guy. I love the ocean. I love Florida. I'm a Florida water. I got near the water. That's just me. But he wanted me out there because he wanted to go hiking. And hiking is one of his favorite pastimes. His sister was in Phoenix at the time. So he, you know, those two would go out hiking together. A lot of people in Arizona just love hiking. And I didn't know anything about hiking. And, you know, so I told him I would. It's a guy thing. He said, Dad, I know this hiking trail is on some mountain. And he challenged me. I said, man, I'll dust you on that, you know. And I said, you know how many 18-year-olds was crying in the military because they couldn't get me, you know. But the thing is, that was one of our goals, is to go out and go hiking and things like that. So I could see that happening. Unfortunately, he wanted me to do it also. He wanted to go to Sedona, one of the beautiful places there as well. And fortunately, I had to go hiking without him. I had just try to commemorate the day he went missing. And I went out and to do that for his birthday 1 year since he'd been missing. I went out to Sedona and I went hiking there. And it was a bittersweet moment, because I know exactly, I was doing it for him and honor for him. But at the same time, you know, I understood why he loved it so much, because to be honest with you, I wanted to do it again. So I still want to do it again. But yeah, he, that's one of the things I know that we would do together. If he was to come, if he was at this moment, you know, we just want to spend time, it would be definitely doing that hiking together, because that's what he wanted. And that's what I want to do with him.
Yeah. I completely understand. It's like, if you could put two of those best things together, water and, you know, the Grand Canyon, like pops, you know, literally like that's maybe right. in a 10-mile radius of each other, right. You'd be like, this is where I'm going to go. This is where that's I'll right. be. So geology has kind of been it's really weird. But since I was a kid, I actually would, my mother would think I was like the weirdest kid, but I knew I was completely different. You know, I was completely, you know, I think out of the box when it comes to things. But I literally still have that, you know, that saying, you know, you're not as smart as a box of rocks. Well, I have that box of rocks that I've been carrying since I was a little girl. And I would like go to like different restaurants, and I would wander, do a lot of wandering in the parking lot. You know, my mom was probably talking to somebody, or she's taking her sweet time to get out the car. And I'm already jumped out of the car and I'm scouring, looking at the gravel, you know, like the little landscaping that they have in different restaurants, or just anywhere I would walk, just walking. I find this beautiful stone. Or if I was at a beach and it's like, it just glistens underneath the water, you know, and it just caught my eye. And I'm like, oh, I'm taking that, right. You know, yeah. And I literally compiled a collection when I was in middle school. I had like, we had workshop, and we would create a wood shop. We would create like different things like the birdhouse and stuff like that. I created a box for my rocks. So, and I still have them. And my wife like looks at like, what is this? And I'm like, oh, it's, you have to understand the background into that. But I've always been attracted and admiring how when you crack it open, the beauty inside of what nature has created millions of years. And it's just like, if you know, you know, like you, right. So the thought of having that connection of, you know, Daniel saying, hey, you know, I want to take you on this this place, this trip, this hike. And you like, I'll dust you, boy, you know, but the whole concept of just taking that moment and kind of seeing it from his perspective as to why it means so much to somebody, you know. So thank you for sharing that. I love that. Thank you.
Speaking about the rocks, you know, I have, you know, of course, this saddened part, this hurtful part is when I had to first get into a Daniel's apartment. And, you know, if anybody can relate to that, you know, you're invading somebody's personal space, right? And being that he's missing, you know, I had to come to a point where I had to get into his apartment. Mm-hmm. And one thing I did notice in his apartment is his rock collection. You're speaking of rock collection. He had a rock collection. And I look at it as, why are you collecting all these rocks? You know, it doesn't, like, he have a shelf with nice different rocks, I guess. I don't know. And so I was talking to some of the geologists out in the searches. You know, a geologist will come out to help search. And they say, man, it's a geology thing. You know, all of us have rock collections, you know. So when you say that, I kind of was laughing in my mind. I said, yeah, that's exactly, you know, a science mind, you know, to want to look at certain things. And like you say, the beauty of how things are formed and things like that. Because I know in geology, what I learned is that they know exactly where those rocks came from, you know, what mountain they came from, what part of the earth they came from, different things like that. So, and that's the, what certain, I think, crystals or minerals is embedded in that rock, you know, they can look at. So just the whole detail of that science part of it, you know, I could see you as a little girl, like you said, going to collect those things because you have to see that sparkle or whatever the case may be. And I've seen that in some of the things that Daniel collected.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I can hear my mom, just get your butt over here. What are you doing? Like, I'll be there, mom, you know, I'm just like putting it in my pocket, you know. But definitely, I definitely understand it. It's just like, if you know, you know. I admire nature in many ways. So yes. And every person has their own perspective and admiration of nature. And that was Daniel's. So
That's right. Yeah, he was the desert and I was the ocean. My goal is, his sister is a marine biologist. So, I found out that's what she wanted to do. I was like, oh my gosh, I finally get my life dream because she and I are going to go scuba diving together. That's the part of Earth I love, underwater somewhere, you know, underwater world. So to be able to, the opportunity to do that is one of the things I was looking forward to. Yes, of course.
Wow.
But yeah, he definitely loved that desert and he loved it. I like it too in some aspect. I had to live there for about 2 years searching for him. And, you know, I say, hey, I never lived there, but I end up there in an unfortunate way. But I did learn to enjoy some of the things that nature has to offer when it comes to the desert experience.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that it's a bittersweet situation. Like,
It is.
If it was under different circumstances, you would probably enjoy it even more. It's almost like your hand was, in a sense, forced to something that you weren't even anticipating and doing under the circumstances. So, yeah, tell me a little bit more. I guess you can probably go into that if you want to answer any more of the questions.
You know, he's just well-versed, just like I am too. We're just music lovers. Well, I mean, we can listen to almost anything, you know, around the house. That's just where it is from. You name it, all kind of genre. That is what we are. We just love music. So, of course, you can tell that by my family. We all music people as well. You know, my mother's a singer and I'm a singer. Believe it or not, Daniel is a singer. People don't, I didn't know that, to be honest with you. I didn't know that, like I said, again, until you get into certain his personal spaces. And I happened to have to get into his phone and I saw a whole video he created. So I'm like, where did he get that voice from? You know, I mean, it's excellent.
And, wow.
But definitely we have a lot of singers in the family, musicians. I'm a percussionist, play the saxophone. So Daniel, he started with the French horn, but he's a trumpet player, you know. His brother plays the trombone, you know, and so on and so on, you know, just different instruments. So it's one of those music-oriented families. We, like I said, from gospel to, you name it, country. Bluegrass, too, believe it or not. But it is that no matter what it is, it's music that we love. So I say Daniel, his favorite music is, I couldn't pinpoint it to literally one thing unless he told me that one was his favorite.
Man, I am in the past life, I was a first, second soprano. Plus, I'm also, so I get it. Music, I used to play the violin and cello. So, Yeah, the voice is such a powerful instrument. And I'm using it in an aspect of this podcast. It is. It's a powerful instrument. When you need to use it for a reason, this is the purpose of it. So
that's right.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Wow.
What I like to do as a parent is to make sure that he knows he's not a child anymore, that I'm here just as a guidance counselor in a sense, you know, parent mode roles turns to guidance roles to me. And so that's the reason why I'm at, just help him guide his young life, young adulthood up into older adulthood, you know, so that type deal. So there's always be a person there to help guide him to some type of wisdom, do some wisdom to help guide him to his direction we're trying to do. So this person, that's where he come to me and talk to me about anything and what my opinions are, and he value those. So that, I like that too.
I know we want to get more in detail about the story, but whenever you're ready to go on to the next question, or we can jump into anything you like.
Yeah, we can go into more of the story and let you know how, you know, the story of Daniel, you know, how he ended up going missing and how that impacts us as a family as well. If that's okay with you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is your platform. Take it.
Yes, I appreciate that. Yeah, well, you know, with the whole entire, you know, event of my son being missing, of course, you know, it's devastating. And I want to make sure, and I put this up front, and I've been trying really hard to do so in different forms. You know, Daniel has a mother. He has two grandmothers. He has a grandfather, too, you know, and he has his siblings, of course, his cousins. So you have a whole family dynamic. You know, Daniel's a person that contributes to society. He's, you know, and I hate to say it this way, and I've seen one person mention to me that it's sad to Laura Coates from, you know, I don't know if you guys know her from CNN, but she was saying that, you know, it's sad that I have to say it's like a validation of who Daniel is. And sometimes often being a person of color, we do that in public. So to give our person some weight or some value, you know, to others. And you know, he's a contributor to society, like I said, and he don't have so much as a speeding ticket. So I know one instance he should have gotten one, but you know, a speeding ticket. So, but you know, having said that, but he's a human being. He's a human being. And fortunately, this American scientist went missing on June 23rd. And it's the most life-changing experience for me and his mother and siblings, like I said. It's a big life-changing change for all of us in many ways. You know, a lot of times we look at our family dynamics and we take certain things for granted, and we just really, you know, just comfortable doing certain things a certain way. But when Daniel went missing, it changed a lot. Him being missing impacted our family in major ways. And I would be talking about that as well. But on June 23rd, 2021, you know, from my perspective as the father, you know, I only could speak on my behalf, but I received a phone call from my daughter. To give you some context to that, my daughter lived in Phoenix at the time when Daniel went missing. You know, before he went missing, she came up there. She came to live with him probably almost a year before that. They come stay with him because she called herself Smile when I say this. She's one of the twins. She say, "Dad, I want to start my life back over." I'm like, "You didn't even have a life yet, you know." But she wanted to start her life back over and went to Arizona to be around Daniel. And she stayed in this apartment for like a month. And I remember Daniel called me and just, oh my God, he was good and happy at first. And then he used to call me almost every day complaining and can't wait till she move or something out of the, he wanted his space. But the thing was, she was able to get out and she was there. But she called me and you know, told me that, you know, being a young lady, she was sound. I could hear it in her voice. I know my daughter, she had some type of, I don't know if she was afraid or something. I mean, I'm kind of worried about that because, like, why is that sound in her voice? But she was just telling me that someone came to her apartment, some guy she don't know, saying that he's one of Dane's coworkers. and that he was looking for Daniel. He was there. Her major concern was that some guy that she don't know came to her door. That frightened her. The other part is why he's asking for Daniel and saying that, you know, he haven't seen him and he's been gone. He's supposed to be at the job site or something. And he's gone since that morning. They haven't heard from him. And so, of course, you know, I had to make sure as a father to, from 2,000 miles away, make sure my daughter is okay. So I had her to call one of her friends and to be there with her. And so I had also had them to go over to Dan's apartment to see if he was there and, you know, and see what's going on. And in the meantime, you know, I was making phone calls, of course, family that I was calling and say, hey, if there's other friends, his sister who lived in California at the time, her and her husband, and to see if they heard from him and maybe then call some of the friends. So we're doing a whole little network of things at this immediately because, you know, I know that Daniel is not a person that's not going to call us at all. So she went there and she noticed, I'm on the phone with her the whole time, mostly. She knows that his vehicle was missing, but his doors was locked. His door was locked, but he had a light on in the living room. You could tell, she said, she looked through a patio window, you could see kind of the blinds kind of cracked or whatever. And the way it was, she saw a ceiling fan or something moving, and it seemed kind of odd, something out of the ordinary. She didn't like that, the way it seemed, you know. And of course, you know, so I still wanted to make sure we do our due diligence, calm it down. You know, maybe he's, you know, somewhere where we, you know, as a family, we know that he wouldn't just not speak to us and let us know what's going on. So, but just in case, you know, sometimes things can happen differently. I told her, you know, just don't take a breath and, you know, we're going to find out where he's located because she started freaking out that something probably happened to her brother. And so over time, when I go call his job to find out a little more details of this whole day and why he was come looking for him, then that's when he told me, hey, yeah, he was said that he left the work site. I didn't know what it was at the time, but the work site that morning, you know, they gave me a rough time. They said it was like 8 a.m. And so I look at the clock because, you know, I'm 3 hours that time of the year. I'm 3 hours ahead of Arizona. So I look at the time difference and I'm like, wait a minute, that's over 6 hours. That's Daniel would not go anywhere. I don't care where he's at. You know, he can say, hey, he surprised his sister, for instance, driving to California to see them and her and her husband. And halfway and almost there, he called and said, hey, I'm coming, you know, that type deal. But he always going to let us know something, right? Somebody knows something. And I look at time like that is not out. So of course that's when I knew something wasn't right. Definitely wasn't right with Daniel. And so I called the Tempe Police Department, which is that's the city that Daniel lived in at the time. He was in Phoenix. Like I said, his sister came in and he wanted to get away from his sister, I guess, in the city, but not too far. He just moved to the next city over and this almost right next to each other. And so I called Tempe Police Department to get a welfare check. You know, hey, look. And I'm going to tell you the scary part about this, and if I can interject this as well, it took me about a good 30 or 40 minutes to make that phone call. And the reason why is because I come from a place where I have police brutality, and I have scars on my body to this day from just simply walking home from work, you know, from police, you know, brutality, right? And so the first thing that came to my mind is that I'm 2,000 some miles away and I'm calling law enforcement to go check in his apartment to see if he's okay. And I'm not there to watch them, right? So it frightened me a lot, right? So a long story with that, it took me a while to say, hey, you know, I just have to do what I have to do. Because what if somebody stole his vehicle, his light is on in there. I want to make sure there's no foul play is going on. Something happened to my son inside the apartment from what my daughter describing. And so I did that and law enforcement literally turned me down on that because I mentioned, because they asked me, where was he last seen? I said, well, his job said he was near, because I didn't know any information. They said this White Taint Mountains. I don't know that about Arizona. So I would use the word White Taint Mountains. Said, oh, that's in the Buckeye area. You know, you got to call the Buckeye Police Department. I said, well, no, he live in this Tempe place, you know. And they told me, no, you got to go call the Buckeye Police Department. They shift me over to that department. And so I did reach out to the Buckeye Police Department, who I asked again to do the welfare check, but they wanted to get the information, of course. And when I gave them more information, I was able to look at the clock again. They told me he hadn't been missing for 12 hours yet, right? So I got to wait 12 hours. So I had to hang the phone up literally and pace the floor for 2 hours and then call back, right? It's crazy just to say he's missing. Now he's missing. It's been 2 hours more and he's missing. So that's when they took the initial report and then called the Tampa Police Department to see if they can do that welfare check. The welfare check consisted of them just simply going by his apartment. I call it a drive-by. They reported the same thing that my daughter did. Oh, we see a light on in through the patio. The doors are locked, that type deal. I was really mad because I was like, hey, nobody can go inside. No, they didn't do that. You know, I just want somebody to get in, talk to landlords, whoever. Get in there and just make sure there's nothing going on nefarious. So, you know, of course, I don't know if I'll try not to go. I don't know how far details you need, but, you know, that was the beginning of all the sorrows and pains that I know that my family, and I know it's the reason why Daniel is actually missing to this date, because what ended up happening was once they took that report, that's when, you know, you don't know it at the time because, you know, of course, we rely on law enforcement. I'm 2,000 miles away. So I'm trying to give them all the information I can give them, work with, make them, as a parent, I'm making all kinds of phone calls in Arizona, talking to his coworkers and his boss, getting all the information I can get as well, and have my daughter do things there and simultaneously. But that's when the problem started, when it came to the report and their reaction. At the time, I say, okay, well, no, they're going to help. At least I thought. And so you start looking at the whole totality of where they actually initially started. You know, when you start understanding more, you realize they didn't do anything at all. But that's where I'm at to that point. And then I can answer some more questions on that as well.
So I'm just taking it all in. I'm so sorry that, first off, I'm sorry about the police brutality. That's one of the things that I wanted to stress on in other episodes, hopefully in the near future. But if you haven't walked in a person's shoes who's encountered that type of violence, you don't know how a person approaches with caution about situations like that and how it could be a tumultuous situation for themselves and for the person that they're reaching out to in care of, making sure that that person doesn't have to go through that same scenario. Because I don't even know if there's a word for it. It demeans you. It dehumanizes a person. You go through this emotional situation where you felt like you have been taken down a notch in regards to who you are and what you represent and how far you've come from in regards to, you know, building yourself up to be something, to create this demeanor and this personality and this journey of what you wanted to be and all that. And it literally is just that 5 seconds literally tears everything down in regards to how you perceive yourself, how you perceive the world, how you perceive the law enforcement.
Oh yeah.
And it's like you've just been tossed in the middle of a dark corner in a damp place that, you know, no one else can reach you emotionally, physically, psychologically. It's a life altering, especially if this, you know, how long the situation went. Like people I've heard, I don't want to get into much, but there's situations like recently, people who are being arrested and they don't show up at the station until 3 days later.
Whoa.
Because they've been held somewhere, tortured somewhere, people of color, and then they take them to the jail and then they die all of a sudden. Under circumstances that they say, oh, they came in that way. Well, why does this person have these bruises and so forth? Oh, that's just how we picked them up. They were resisting arrest. There's some cases like that out here. And I was trying to, that's a whole nother scenario.
It is. I remember, if I can throw this in, when I was a child, I know it's outside of Daniel, but when I was a child, I was literally coming from work, had my button down shirt like this, but I had to, you know, loosen myself. And I'm a high school student at the time, and I had to go to school the next morning. So I'm walking, I think it took me two hours walk to get home, but I was a responsible young man. And these two white officers, I didn't know it was officer time, but it was two white guys. Look, they was built, had tank tops on, and they saw me pass by. They passed by me in the car, and my mom, like, you know, something don't seem kind of fishy. Why are they looking at me that way? But they made a U-turn and say, hey, boy, like, hey, boy, where you going? Come in. They start chasing me. To make a long story, I end up not going into full details. There's a lot of details how I got the scars and stuff on my body from that episode as well. And I made it back to my job, bloody up. We had a off-duty officer working there for our security at night. And so once they called an ambulance, and I wonder why the police never showed up at the time, but I got to the hospital. My mother was waiting on me, my sister, and the same two guys. That's when they identified themselves as cops. And what I learned when I was able to get back well and went back to work from the off-duty cop who knows them, he said, David, I'm glad you got away from them, because they would have beat you up really bad, or they would have called you a cop killer and shot you, say, oh, they was scared for their life type deal. He said, he know those guys. And so I was able to get away. Thank God. I was very smart. I could, if I gave you the full story, you'll see why, how I was smart and how I got away from them. And I made it back to my job. You know, I was bloodied up. I made it back to my job. And, you know, just the thing, you know, like you said, that scars your brain and scars your mind. And that's not the only instance, but it scars your mind because, you know, you look at all the times where it wasn't no cell phones. It wasn't certain things that we can record back then. And I watch a lot of my friends get shot in the back from cops and, you know, it's nothing to it, you know. But now they have some kind of repercussions of it. Just a little bit now, but it's a lot different then. But yeah, I was worried about that with Daniel. And that's what made me hesitate for stuff like that I've seen growing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I don't want to take away from your platform, but I want to add to it. So if someone is interested in knowing more about in detail about your journey and Daniel and searching for him, and that you've already talked about, because I want to have people who are listeners redirect to your platforms and your live feeds, because I'm just wanting to add to it. I want to be a link to saying, here, this is a father who has been looking for almost 3 years for his son, and he has the deep, you know, personal, direct, you know, searching and all the details that he's been receiving from. I think there was even a time that I watched your live feed, and you were a little bit, and I completely understand it, you were frustrated in how things were being done, how they were treating your case, how they stopped helping you at a very early in the stage of searching. That part, I was just like, how can a parent prepare themselves for a situation like that? First off, you didn't want to be in this position, but yet all the resources and all the abilities in the opportunities of organizations and law enforcement to actually dig their heels into something and make it important, because it's important to you and it's important to Daniel and your family to find him, how they don't have the same, you know, passion as you do.
They don't. Yes.
And that was like, that's a whole nother level. Like if as a parent, as a family person, a person who has someone who's so close and dear to their heart, and to have them just like, good luck. I was enraged. So I just wanted to put my little two cents in, because I was like, what? Oh my gosh. I was so upset.
Yes. Yes. Well, I can say, you know, like any family, though, you know, nobody's, like you said, is prepared for a situation like that. I can say, coming to Daniel's disappearance, that's probably from my father's thought that one of my children become missing. Like I said, just being a retired military guy, I remember even that story I'm saying when my daughter called. I was literally in my favorite place. My daughters know, they know, my children know, Daniel know, my seat. In my back area, I like to watch television where I relax. It's a spot where, for me, it's a place of peace in my own home where I can sit back, and because I love air, like Daniel and my children, we love nature. So I can hear the birds, I can hear, watch the deer and coming out the woods, for instance. And you know, this is a place of peace. Take my troubles away from my military experience. And to get thrown into a situation like that, you know, you just don't know how and, you know, when it can happen to you. So this going forward, this the whole story of everything that happened to my son and what happened to the family, it affected us in many directions. It affected our family dynamics. I can tell you about that some other time as well. It affected the whole dynamics that we have now currently. The other part is by Daniel going missing. Also, it was, you know, just the whole learning experience where you are learning more about law enforcement, how they handle cases. I didn't never known there were experiences. 600 to 750,000 people go missing every year in this country. I didn't know there was 2,300 people go missing every day in this country. I didn't know that 40% of all the missing is Black people. And I know that was only though, even though we're 12% of the population. So the thing is, it affects people of color a lot more. They don't speak about the indigenous folks and the indigenous women that go missing at an alarming rate as well. And yet we don't get the, and I had to live it, you know, rather fighting to get Daniel's story on a national level for 3 months straight. And I talked to, for instance, I hate to bring it up because they consider a friend of mine now, but Mr. PT though told me that all he had to do was make a phone call, you know, to the local channel, and it blew up into a big national story. I had to fight for 3 months just to get a little local stuff going first and to get it to that level. So long story, you know, it goes back into the same teachings that I had with my children, Daniel as well, that sometimes his older brother, that's the way I can go at it. He is a young man. He went to junior high. He was in junior high, about to go to high school. And he had this little friend. He's a white young man. And he said, "Dad, this is my friend." I forgot what his name was. But he said, "Yeah, we're going to play sports together. We're going to go to high school together. We're going to," you know, they just had his plans, right? And I told him, I said, "Man, that's great. You know, I'm really happy for him." And then he says, "You know, we're going to get the same job." And I said, "Wait a minute, son." Now I said, "You know what? You know, it's possible, but you're going to have to fight 3 times harder for that same job, right?" And so it's sad to say, and it hurts me to tell my son that, but that's my experience. My experience is doing that a little harder. But what I have learned, though, out there in that desert, you know, it's another story of putting the whole search together. I was able to do that and never did anything like that in my life. But, you know, put the search together. And when I was out there searching for Daniel, of course, we find other human remains out there, bring clothes for other families. It's just that, you know, I ran into a lot of other families, too. A lot of families talk about their stories. They miss loved ones, and they was out there helping me, you know. And so what I'm saying is that whole experience showed me that this whole missing person thing is one of those, it's talked about, but not really talked about, and not talked about enough. And there's an alarming rate of people going missing, especially people of color. And, you know, there's an alarming rate of people going missing, and it's between human trafficking to you name it. All of those reasons why people are going missing, but it's not highlighted like it should be. And so I made that part of my mission as well, and I grew a passion about that as well. So I just want people to know my first priority is to my son, because I'm a father. A father, I've learned since I was a kid, a father's a protector, he's a provider. He protects spiritually and naturally, you know what I'm saying? So it's a whole lot that a father do. He had to even put his life on the line for his family, right, if it came down to it. So I grew up that way, and I believe those things. And, you know, of course, it's part of your birthright. However, at the same time, you know, I try to help other families with that. So Dan's my first priority, but I have a second job as well that I've been pushing to. It wasn't because like I said before, and I tell people all the time, what I'm about to do right now that's coming up pretty soon, you'll hear about that as well. I'd rather be on a beach somewhere. You know, I haven't been on a beach since really the way I want to since COVID. I mean, that's crazy since COVID things started, because I'm one thing or the other, I can do what I want to do in life, but like I used to, but you know, sometimes life take you to a place where you have to do more. And I cannot sit back and watch when I learned all the things I have learned and don't do something about it. I got to at least try. I'm just one person, but at least I got to try to do something, right? So that's why I want people to know that, hey, look, from this point on with my son Kay, sometimes tragedy can bring other things, possibilities, other things to happen in at the time. So that's where I'm at right now. Still currently searching for my son. At the same time, I'm advocating for change when it comes to these laws and these things that's happening in this country when it comes to missing persons. especially those of color. Because if you look at the Daniel Robinson Foundation, underneath it says closing the gap. And closing the gap means that, you know, hey, look, we got to close those loopholes and those disparity marks that's there. So that's my job, and you'll be hearing some more things about it. So I just want people to be aware of that. And I definitely need that kind of support, because, you know, what I plan to do is going to take a lot of support, and I need support. So I would like to share it with you. I'm kind of talking around the corner, but I would like to share it with you now. But I just want everybody to be aware of that as well. And so, you know, just need that support, because we got to do something about that. So what happened to my family and what happens to other families? Like I said, Daniel's America's son. It happens to a lot of families in this country. And, you know, we're going to stop that. We have to stop that from happening. Mm-hmm. Especially with the technology that we have. Come, it's no excuse. Come on now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yes. I have officially stated that podcasting has been, I think I've said it in previous episodes or with other interviews, podcasts had become my platform of choice. Less of my face, more of the voice. I don't know. That's right. But it's, and I wanted to bring up your organization as well, because I'm glad you mentioned that too, because I wanted to emphasize on that and to have other people support that as well. And you're right. You're absolutely right. Bridging that gap. One of the things that just, it flusters me outside of that is when people say, why do you have to be a specific organization that has a specific talking about people of color? We all matter, you know, like I don't see color, and you know, that's right. One of the things that's like, this gets me all riled up and I have to kind of bite my tongue. It's like, I understand that, but you have to literally like walk in a person's shoes to understand that the world sees us completely different. We are still in some, you know, the old ways are still around, and they're being taught by the next generation how to treat and respect or disrespect other people who have, you know, more melanin and more pigmentation in their skin, thinking that they are less human, and don't hang around those people and give us this, you know, stereotypes. And I, for one, I can't state that I have plenty of stories to talk about, but I've had my share. When I hear other people who are of darker melanin in the, you know, have more melanin in their skin, it just breaks my heart that we have to be treated that way. And yes, we're not trying to segregate ourselves. We're already in that mentality of segregation, but we're trying to empower our voices by saying that we want to bridge that gap. We want to have a level playing field in regards to giving us the same choices, the same respect, the same opportunities. You know, of course, we're not, you know, people say that they're colorblind and all that. I try not to say to people who, you know, talk to people who have that type of mindset, because that's like talking to your blue in the face, as they say. But I think once you have somebody who, you know, you bring them into your circle, and to have them, you know, less is more. When you talk less and have them observe,
that's right,
what a person has to go through, it brings in more respect or brings more understanding as to, this is not how you thought it was. And, you know, that brings to light in regards to what we struggle with all the time. So, yeah, thank you for that. It's I just want to share that, because it's
yes,
it gets me going, like, really.
Oh, yes.
I love and one of the things that, like, I have in my family, I have military and law enforcement. My father was law enforcement and military. My mother's military. The whole kick about Blue Lives Matter and the Black Lives Matter situation, the different types of organizations that are pointed to, you know, bring out, you know, injustice for whatever organization, their purpose, their mission, their goal. One person, and it stuck to me, you know, Blue Lives Matter is, I respect the law enforcement to some degree, but to say that they respect all law enforcement of whatever color they are, You can take off your uniform, but we can't take off our skin.
That's right.
So that always stuck with me.
That makes a whole lot of sense. That's right.
So we live with that every day. You can clock out, no longer law enforcement, no longer wearing the badge. You're off duty. We're never off duty. We're always got our head, you know, swivel.
I'm going to have to use that one. That's true.
Yeah. Wow. So that's my 2 cents again. That's like, what, 6 cents now you have in your pocket?
<That's right. laughs> I like it. I'm learning a lot. So, thank you so much.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, so I don't know if you want to elaborate on your organization, but if you had anything else, just please do. I just want to add to your platform and to give everyone resources and links and an opportunity to follow you and to support you.
Well, you know, the Daniel Rosa Foundation is started from just that, from the pain and suffering my family and I had to go through trying to locate Daniel, the pain of trying to form a search, the pain of trying to get out information, you know, reach the social media platforms, to just simply getting law enforcement to take the case seriously, you know. So Daniel Rosa Foundation is a foundation that's geared to do some of the work and aid families to, you know, have resources they can rely on. You know, like I said, families do not have a missing person and know how to handle a missing person case. You know, you have to go through those trials and errors with law enforcement or wherever. And I want to alleviate some of that. So that's the reason why I birthed the Daniel Rosa Foundation and carry my son's name, because, of course, my son is missing. But I want to up front say, if a person was to want to help with the Daniel Rosa Foundation, we're a true 501c3. However, I put it on pause. So right now it's currently on pause only because of administrative reasons. One of those reasons is we don't have certain things in place, because, you know, if I'm putting it on my son's name, I want to make sure it's providing those services that we say we're going to do. And so that's what I'll tell my board members, is that, you know, hey, look, we need to be ready to provide those services. So it's currently on pause, but it should be, you know, ready, up and running again sometime this year, working on that. But I just wanted everybody to know that's what the foundation is for, and that's what it's built for, is to provide some of those services, provide all of those services that family need, but specifically for people of color, you know, specifically to make the playing field, if you want to say even, just like you were saying earlier, to bring on equality, because people of color do not get the stories put out there the way it should be. People of color do not get the resources that they need. I have reached out to many, many nonprofit organizations to help me out there in that desert. I did not get law enforcement help, not a dime for law enforcement, not a dime for any other 501c3 or any organization out there, except for one. And it's sad to say, and that was Black and Missing Foundation, where they donated money, they donated drones. They really, Derek and Natalie really did some things. So I really appreciate them. And, you know, and I reached out to many. People say, hey, reach out to Avengers with a Purpose, or reach out to, I can't think of the other one that's always giving me a Texas Echo Search or whatever the case may be. You know, and I reached out to all of these people. They never showed up. In fact, not talking bad about anyone, but Texas Echo Search told me that Daniel didn't fit their profile, whatever that meant. But they did recommend me someone else who didn't show up. So what I'm saying is, we don't need that when it comes to families who are in desperate need, like our family were out there in the desert. I needed those resources. I'm begging the public for funding to keep the searches going. Thank God it was done for 49 weeks, covered 35,000 land, solved the case for the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, and bring closures, for some form of closure, for other families, because we found their family members out there. So, and you know, just the fact that was the case for our family, I want to make sure other families, especially, like I said, particular families of color. I do have one board member who's connecting us with the indigenous community and for the reservations, to have access with the reservations and things like that. So Dan Ross Foundation do work with also some of the indigenous, one of the indigenous organizations that give us some of the freedoms to do certain things on the reservations as well, to search for our loved ones and search for loved ones, and if it comes in contact with those reservations. So doing a lot of work like that, but like I said, the foundation is still on pause for right now because of those administrative things. that I would not feel comfortable having a foundation or anybody donating at this moment and saying, hey, look, you know, it's not pushing. They'll have those things in order so it can be able to put out those resources and things that I would like to see. And that's one reason why I came up with the foundation in the first place. So, but that's what we're working on right now. And it will be up and running hopefully this year. I'm praying on it in faith. But yes, other thing, you know, Please Help Find Daniel is still, you know, I could put those two separate things together. They're separate, but they kind of together, work together, foundation as well. Please Help Find Daniel, two different names. Please Help Find Daniel side of things is what I started as a grassroots movement. You guys, when you go to pleasehelpfinddaniel.com, all the resources are there, from donating to help me continue my fight for Daniel, keep my boots on the ground in Arizona, you name it, the flyers, you know, all that stuff is not cheap. You know, it's very expensive. I can't tell you that, but by faith, things been still rolling. So I just need all the help I can with the mail-in protest is one of the biggest parts for me right now, because I am approaching those officials in Arizona. And it's always nice when I have all these people backing me like that, you know, all these letters coming in. They cannot forget about Daniel's case with these picket signs going into those departments, and as well as that petition with thousands and thousands of people backing me, and they believe in everything I'm doing and trying to fight. So it helps out a lot. So everything's on pleasehelpfinddaniel.com, ways people can help and share Daniel's story. So yes, I employ everybody to do that if they can.
Yeah, thank you. Because I was going to ask you about any actual resources and additional information. And whenever you have any updates about your organization up and running, please let me know. I will be glad to share as much as I can. I have been sharing on Twitter all your, you probably haven't seen it, because you got thousands of thousands of people. And I'm so happy that there's a lot of people who are following. I think you've even mentioned on one of your feeds, you have like all these people following you, all these people saying that they're going to help you, and only like one person, two people show up. It's good. It's good that they have, you know, that they're doing that. I'm more like a digital warrior. I'm trying to do as much as I can. And I know there's a lot of other people who are doing the same way. Anything and all helps. No matter where you're at demographically, if you're in front of a laptop, if you're boots to the ground, everything matters in regards to finding Daniel.
That's right. That's why I really pushed, because I do have a lot of people. I have someone in Russia help, believe it or not.
Wow.
I'm just saying different countries is what I'm really saying. And, you know, they say, hey, Mr. Robinson, how can I help? And I don't live in Arizona. And that's the reason why with Please Help Find Daniel, I have the flyer distribution where you can go to the website and download flyers. If you're here in the States, no matter where you're at, because those flyers have to go across this country, because I believe the person or persons who may know something could have been in the U-Haul. I use that same analogy all the time. Been in the U-Haul riding down Sunbelt Parkway, saw something that day or whatever they was doing. And then now they live in Little Whiskey, Georgia. I'm just saying, I use that word all the time. Little Whiskey, Georgia. The reason why I use Little Whiskey, Georgia, I ran into it. The smallest place I can think of in Georgia, and the backwoods. And they live there now. And if they only can get that flyer, and that flyer, you know, they'll jot their memory. And that's a lead. Also, the fact that, you know, I don't know foul play happened on that scene when that vehicle showed up. I just don't know what that exactly means. Daniel could be held captive somewhere, or somebody, whatever the case may be. Those flyers have Daniel's picture. It has also the tip line. If a person want to say something, they have a conscience, and they remind them, they see this flyer, they're going to want to put out the information. So those things are important. So that's the reason why I make it available for anybody, everyone they can, they want to help in different ways. The mail-in protests, like I said, you can do that from home. This all you're doing is, it's a form of, if you don't want to donate money, your donation can be, again, with the flyers and also the protests. Because what you're doing is using your ink, and I know it's paper, that's why I say it's a donation form, is because you're downloading and printing out these flyers, or you're printing out these picket signs, and you're mailing those picket signs out to these departments. That keep Daniel's case from becoming a cold case. As long as the public's interested in that case, it would not go cold. Trust me. Especially, they cannot go cold when they're not finished doing the complete work that they should, that I'm fighting for. So I need people to get thousands of flyers into those departments every day possible, and all across the country. So that's one way you can participate. Again, everybody know the petition, no matter where you're at. And also, you know, just sharing Daniel's story. So no matter where you're at, it's possible to share and to be active in helping me find Daniel. And I'm not asking stuff, I'm humbly asking that because I really appreciate everybody who have done that. I tell volunteers all the time in the desert, like, look, you spending your gas money, you spending your time, you're risking, because it's hot out there, 118 degrees, can you imagine that? You're risking your health in certain areas because it's hot and things, you're tired, whatever the case may be. You're doing all that for a stranger, a person you don't know. You know, I mean, who would take that for granted? I don't take it for granted. You know, that just showed me a lot of love when I see a lot of people doing things that I don't even know. They don't know Dan. They don't know me personally. But I really appreciate everybody who does what they do to help me continue my fight for my son.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to extend that. Thank you, whoever is currently a listener who just got into, you know, starting to listen to the episode or has been following David and the search for Daniel Robertson on his platforms. I extend that forever grateful and thank you for continuing to fight that fight, you know, to find justice, to find him.
That's right.
You know, that's something that all of us, you know, who are in this game, in the platforms and the industry and in what we're doing as a podcaster, what we're doing as a father who's searching for their lost loved one. So I extend that. Thank you. And
yes,
please continue helping in any way that you guys can. I'll provide the links and show notes, any resources that I can provide, like the petition, if you have that continuing, I'll go ahead and add that as well in the show notes and any other additional information that you provide to me. I'll go ahead and place that in there too, because, you know, I just thought of this, like, you know, it takes a village to raise, you know what I'm saying? So US all the way to Russia, that is our village. We are searching for Daniel. So did you have any additional questions for me? But I think if you have anything to add, I think we probably had a good closing.
Yeah, sure. You know, like I say, again, I really appreciate everybody. I appreciate you as well for even extending your platform to help Daniel. Hadn't been for a lot of the true crime communities, the podcasters, you know, Daniel wouldn't have a voice. You know, and it's just one thing to get a person's case up on a national level. It's another thing to actually get it heard by everybody, because not everybody look at certain things. So, but we do look at social media, and people take their time out and show their love, like you are showing your love here for a family. I truly appreciate that, because it goes a long way. Your passion and what you're doing helps families like us, you know. So I really appreciate you, and I thank you so much for even taking the time, like I said, to extend your platform.
No, it's been an honor. It's been an extreme honor. I wish we could meet on different circumstances, but like you mentioned, in technology, we are able to connect to people on so many levels when it comes to, and it could be for the best, and it could be for the bittersweet moments like this. So yeah, I thank you for even accepting this opportunity to speak with you. I don't know why I kind of belittle myself in regards to, like, oh, David, no, gosh, he's got like so much going on. I don't know if he's going to have time for this little old, you know, but
no,
I think everything,
no,
yeah, everything, you know, every little bit counts. Everything, every
it
little
does,
bit matters.
It does.
So
it really does. I learned that a long time ago, if I could say this really quick, Derek and Natalie, I asked for advice, I asked them advice. I call them up one day and say, look, what advice can you give me about these platforms? Because, here it is, you know, people asking for interviews and things like that. And they said, try to get all the small ones that you can. Because not saying that yours is small at all. What I'm saying is all the smaller ones that you can. And because that's where the real people are, in a sense, right? And that's where you start. And I have been taking that to heart, starting from the platforms. And it helped me out tremendously, get Daniel's story out there. Because when I see it, like I say, the passion, more passionate. It's almost like a small church. You go to a big church is one thing, but you go to a little small church, you can see everybody just like a more of a loving and a passionate type thing going on. Yeah, it reminds me of that, and it's true, you know. So I really know that Daniel's story is getting out there the right way. And, you know, people are hearing the truth and hearing certain things, so that need to be portrayed out there. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're very, very welcome. And I've been like back and forth for the last year and a half with Natalie. So I've been trying to get her on our schedules are just like she's got a lot of going on too. And I am so proud, and I'm so honored to even, you know, help out in any way that I can, you know. So yeah, that's a wonderful organization, and I'm glad that they came out and helped out.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. They really, yes. Wonderful, wonderful ladies. Yes. So, but also lastly, if you can, I just really, really want to stress very close. I'm really anxious to say it early, but I'm about 90. I tell people 98.9. That's what I tell my family. sure of something I want to go do here. And I just want to know when they hear a new side of things where I'm trying to work even harder for missing person cases. And I need the support, because what I'm doing is going to definitely change the way I can approach law enforcement when it comes to pushing them to do more of my son's case. I need them. That's why the Maryland protest is really important. I need them to finish this forensics, because if that was a vehicle, police crews were lying on the side, we already know how that would have went. It would have been automatically a crime scene. In Dan's case, that crime scene was never deemed a crime scene for law enforcement, despite of the fact what my investigator found, a foul play. And you know, it would give me more leverage, but I need everybody's support. It'll give me the leverage that I need to push law enforcement even harder to force them to get these forensics done on this vehicle, the clothing that was found on the scene, the airbags, you know, et cetera. So I just need those continued support. And so just please, that's all I can say. I'm losing, you know, what I would like to say, but I just need the support. I really need that real strong support. The same grassroots that came out at the beginning, I'm going to need it even more now.
Yeah, you got it. If that's the least that we can all do, all of us together can make a huge, huge difference. So, yes. And I want the best for you and your search for Daniel. I want him at home as if he was my own, because he is. We're a very broad community and knit community, and every person that's out there needs to be brought home. So, and I thank you so much for this opportunity, David, to talk about Daniel's story and your journey and how have everything come together with all the things that you have done. You know, it's been an honor to actually be part of that. And I wish all the best, and I will continue doing what I'm doing on this side of the world in helping as much as I can. So thank you so much for this opportunity.
I truly blessed to be here. Thanks so much.
Thank you, David.
If you enjoy our show, please rate us on Apple or Spotify. And be sure to come back and listen to us every other Thursday. Until then, this is Jasmine Castillo. We are Voiceless No More. Proud member of Darkcast Network, Uncovered.com, TransDoe Task Force, Crime Survivors for Safety and Justice, and partner with Search and Support San Antonio and Seasons of Justice.